To start, my name is Ryan Treliving. I'm a first-year student at UVic, and I'm from Calgary. And right now, I'm studying sociology. The reason that I took this course and kind of thought it looked interesting was that I was trying to hope to learn more about social media overall and how like platforms are created and maintained so professionally, especially through the pandemic and such. And overall, like what I've liked the most this course is learning about different people and their different PLNs and how they got started and have kept going with it throughout the pandemic.
Nice. Well, hi, my name's Caitlin and I'm from Vancouver. I'm in third year studying at UVic and I'm majoring in biology and recently decided to minor in environmental science. I actually recently transferred from Queen's University to UVic last year, but the transition was weird since it was all online, and now I feel like I finally go to the school now that it's in person, which is awesome. My favorite part of this course, I think, is honestly this project, because it's kind of the first time I've been face to face with people in this course, and we've been able to do something super interactive like a podcast, which I've never been a part of in any course. So yeah, that's super exciting.
Hi, my name is Kylo Patty. I am a fourth year sociology student here at UVic. I heard about EDCI 338 from one of my good friends that's in the Bachelor of Education program. She actually recommended it to me, and I've really enjoyed taking it so far. I've been able to learn about online media and how to incorporate it into my own PLN, which is really cool.
Hi, my name is Foster Laycraft, and I am finishing up my last semester of my undergrad. I'm majoring in French, and I'm hoping to one day teach elementary school. So I took this class just because as social media becomes more and more prevalent, I think it's really important to understand it from an education perspective.
Okay, so we thought for our podcast, we've kind of had like an interactive podcast and we'd ask each other important questions we've kind of come up with that we've developed kind of throughout this semester's content. So Ryan, I know that you were in high school during the pandemic, and Kylie, you were in university. So I was wondering how the pandemic affected your guys' individual PLNs, and was this transition difficult or was it easy? Kylie, if you'd like to share first, you can go ahead.
I definitely found the transition difficult from the result of the COVID-19 pandemic. Numerous aspects of my PLN network definitely changed. My education was shifted from in-person to completely online, as well as other students around the world. This is definitely a difficult transition for me, as I never taken an online course before. In May of 2020, I took 3 summer courses, and I discovered I actually really do enjoy taking online classes. Having my classes online, I found courses to be more flexible due to most of them being asynchronous, as well as more convenient, as I didn't have to spend hours getting ready and bringing food to school. I also found that I had more time to like dedicate to school. There, of course, were negatives to having classes online, such as not getting the opportunity to engage with other students. Like in person, I also found that I was engaging less and in conversations like with peers and professors and TAs compared to like being in person. Having classes be fully online made it very difficult to do this, for sure. I did notice my small talk decreased over time, but I eventually became more comfortable being behind my computer screen and communicating through Zoom and all that. This September, school was moved back to being face-to-face. However, many of my classes are still being offered online. This has satisfied my needs that I like of having online, but as well being able to like talk in person. So it definitely was nice having both of my classes still be like a mix.
So when the pandemic first hit, I was in the back end of my grade 11 year, and then unfortunately the majority of my grade 12 year was also online. When the pandemic first hit, a lot of people, me especially, didn't really understand what was happening. So I wasn't really taking online school so seriously, but once we figured out that it was a new reality, I kind of had to learn to adapt to this fully online change, which was really hard for me because I am a student who likes to learn being hands-on and kind of in the face, like face-to-face conversations with my peers or teachers and such. So the original awkwardness of kind of being in my own space at home and your bedroom at your desk or your kitchen or wherever you're doing your Zooms or whatever from, was hard to get that feel of interacting on the level of normalcy. So I had to change my PLN and open it to a variety of different things, such as like YouTube videos to try and learn better, or making one-on-one sessions with teachers just to try and get my learning back to normal, which was difficult. But it also kind of made me feel unmotivated in the sense that you're just sitting around all day, being home, can be lazy, nobody's doing anything. But yeah, I think the biggest shift for me was just that feeling of normalcy to learn in the way that I like to learn best, which is more of a face-to-face, hands-on conversation.
Caitlin, I know that you wanted to talk about kind of engaging with the public through social media. Do you want to maybe talk a little bit about the strengths and weaknesses of using social media publicly in today's age?
Yeah, totally. So I think that one thing I personally notice is a major weakness of the use of social media publicly has been just the prevalence of cancel culture and just general online negativity that I've seen online. I think people now are just more overly critical online than I believe they used to be before the pandemic, since, you know, people are spending more time on their devices and therefore more time on social media as a result. I also think that the pandemic just gave us so much extra time on our hands that we just weren't used to, which just allowed people to have the time to nitpick other people more online, I think. You know, of course, I believe taking responsibility for one's actions is important and necessary for growth to happen. But I do believe the way in which we are demanding people to take responsibility has not been constructive nor like motivating in any way for people to grow themselves. Like an analogy I always go back to is like, if someone yells at you, like do better, or someone pats you on the back, like it's okay, like you know you can do better than this, like which is gonna be the most motivating for you to personally change, right? And I also think that cancel culture becomes even more dangerous online because it's so easy to participate in and jump on the bandwagon while still remaining hidden behind, you know, this veil of an online persona. I think another weakness of using social media publicly that kind of goes hand in hand with my last point is that it's more difficult to portray your intent or your true meaning online. And it's so easy for these misunderstandings to happen between people, which can spread super rapidly and can be taken out of proportion in a super negative way. I also think that another weakness is the privacy issues involved in the use of social media publicly today. So for instance, you know, future employers can judge you based on your past and like past mistakes you've had that may still exist on social media. Like even if you're a completely different person and you've grown since then, you know, that still remains there. And it's a scary thought to realize that, you know, nothing can ever truly be erased from the internet once it's been public on social media. So shifting in terms of the benefits of public social media usage that we're all aware of is, you know, the political and social issues that can be discussed and shared on social media super easily. So for instance, like movements such as the BLM movement and its message has been able to be spread effectively and quickly on social media and actually spark like true change in political and social systems, whereas before it was more difficult, you know, to spread the message. Also, people have been able to, you know, raise money through social media very quickly for people who are in need, who have been affected by the issues associated to the BLM movement. So yeah, that's all I'd like to say.
Awesome. Also adding to that, why do you believe that media literacy is important in 2021?
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. I think that the insane influx of information in this day can be incredibly overwhelming for everyone. And to be able to discern what information is valid is super important. There's so much false information out there, which can be super dangerous, especially for young, impressionable people, let alone ourselves. I also think that having media literacy establishes a form of integrity in people's work because people can actually have the skills to like navigate the internet and detect truthful sources. I also think it's important to have the skill of media literacy to develop critical thinking skills, which is super important skill to have for, you know, future jobs, political discussions with friends and family, just at the dinner table even, and just like day-to-day activities like reading and understanding news articles in depth. And I think being able to detect these reliable sources are really important in order to, you know, foster and support like healthy and constructive conversation, and also develop, you know, your own personal opinions on important matters and current events today.
Yeah, I totally agree, Caitlin, with what you're saying. If I can just like add something, I think along with media literacy, it's really important to be aware of what you're seeing on social media and to try to have like a range of different opinions available to you. I think often people kind of seek out news or content that shares their beliefs. And this is totally understandable. I think we all kind of do it because it's what you're interested in. It's what you can relate to. But I think that there are a couple issues with this. First is that if you're only being exposed to information and opinions that share your ideals, you're creating a significant blind spot for your information that may be just as important, even if it doesn't directly agree with you. I'm not saying it's bad to have like opinions, obviously, on things that you see, but I do think it's important to take in as many varying viewpoints as possible to ensure that you're able to make kind of an educated decision on like what your beliefs are. The other thing I think is worth mentioning specific to 2021 with all the social platforms that we have available to us, like our phones, our laptops, our tablets, whatever, they have algorithms in them, which I've kind of just realized in the last little bit. They're like these little programs working inside your device, and they analyze every time you use your device and how you use it. I kind of was made aware of this because I listened to this podcast with Tristan Harris, who is a computer scientist, and he spent 3 years at Google working on how technology companies should ethically steer the minds of the public. Just like a crazy job. But like I listened to him speak about these algorithms, and it kind of blew my mind what he said, because basically he said we are currently living in an attention economy, meaning that the platforms and companies that attract our attention for longer are worth more. Like he was saying how like Facebook is worth whatever it is, like hundreds of billions of dollars, but we don't pay anything to use it. So what the kind of financial thing that's supporting them is literally our attention, like us using the app allows them to get ads, kind of, et cetera. But I think my biggest takeaway about these algorithms is that you can, is what Harris said. He had this example about how YouTube has become kind of the new babysitter. And he talks about how you can stick your kid in front of YouTube and put on like an educational video about World War II. And then 2 hours later, you all sit down at the dinner table and your kid is talking about how the Holocaust never happened, because like the YouTube algorithm is just going to like slowly take you like further and further to like the extreme. And so like your kid's just sitting there like watching video after video until like slowly it's like starting to do like crazy conspiracy videos. So I think all this is just kind of to say that you need to be really intentional when you use media, like with media literacy, like what Caitlin's saying, because these algorithms kind of can think for you if you don't think for yourself, and you're not going to have any kind of variety in the opinions that you're being exposed to, and it's not going to serve you kind of in going out into the world, essentially.
Good point. That was a really good point, Foster. Totally agree with you. Ryan, I know you wanted to touch base on the topic of negative critiques. I was curious to know if you had a personal experience with receiving negative like critiques from the public audience that affected your PLN.
Yeah, so I haven't personally encountered or had like any experiences where critiques online, like a mass amount of hate comments or like negative sharing or anything like that. But just because it hasn't happened to me personally, I feel very involved in it still, because it's happening around us a lot in like social media now. I think it's important to know that people being as personal or in personal in their lives with their PLNs, especially on social media now, and showcasing only what some might say like highlight reels of their life with the fear of receiving hate comments or showing their lives if they're not perfect in other ways. I think it's important to know that like whatever you put out there, nobody's gonna 100% like, but I think we've seen now more than ever with the use of like cancel culture, like Caitlin touched on, and like mass amount of negative hate comments, like the negativity that can come out of PLNs. I think it's crazy to see that although we may not be getting hate specifically from our own posts or whatever we put on our PLNs, that because we engage with social media a bunch, that we're still involved in it, and it's like making up kind of our platforms even though we're not putting it out there because it's so popular nowadays. So that's basically it.
Yeah, that was an excellent point. So another theme in this course that we're kind of going off of, that we've discussed on many occasions, is the importance of inclusion in people's PLN. So Kyla, I'd like to ask how you've incorporated inclusion into your own PLN and your own work environment as well.
I definitely think inclusion is incorporated in my work environment. Here at UVic, inclusion is especially prioritized and is strongly discussed by students and taught in numerous courses. UVic has like a diverse environment and has individuals from all backgrounds. This range includes individuals differentiating in religion, race, age, sexual orientation, disabilities, socioeconomic status, and opinions. Like for example, sitting in a lecture hall, you'll notice inclusion by just looking around the room. You'll notice age will typically range from 18 to 30 plus years old. When it comes to my PLN, I ensure to be inclusive by promoting others' ideas, encouraging them to share more, and learning from their experience. I also make sure I'm being inclusive by taking it upon myself to become educated on unfamiliar topics and ensure I'm using the correct terminology towards others by watching videos, engaging with online media platforms, and reading peer review articles in gray literature. I also personally find one of the greatest tools an individual can have is education. By educating myself, I only hope that my fellow peers feel completely included in the work environment that we do share. Having inclusion in my work environment allows me to learn from other different perspectives and backgrounds. Not everyone's view will be the same, so it's very beneficial to hear and even discuss the thought process and formed opinions by others. As learning from others is beneficial not only for me, it might also be beneficial for those around me to learn my own thought process. My background contributes to inclusion at UVic, and it's very important to share with my peers, even if it means going out of my comfort zone to be both the loudest in the room and on Zoom.
Yeah, that's awesome. So to kind of wrap up our presentation, we wanted to do an interview with a working professional that had to be moved online during the pandemic. So I think this is a great time to be talking about online learning because everyone is doing it. And so we kind of wanted to steer away from, since we've been talking a lot throughout the course with specifically like education professionals, we wanted to kind of broaden our scope a little bit and go outside of there. So I was able to virtually sit down with Tracy Moyne, who is the head of HR for an accounting firm in Calgary, Alberta. We had a really good kind of half hour discussion about online tools during COVID, viral work environments, and kind of PLNs in general. For the sake of time, I trimmed it down quite a bit to what I felt was the most interesting and relevant to our class. I really appreciated her insight into what it was like for the culture of the firm once they moved online, as well as some of the learning difficulties she witnessed through virtual learning for the employees and things like that. So yeah, this is Tracy's thoughts on all that.
Okay, so my name is Tracy Moan. I'm the HR coordinator or HR director at Baker Tilly Catalyst. What my role entails is a little bit of everything, but basically operations. I support the CEO and work closely with the chief financial officer. We all have sort of our own little slivers, but myself and the chief financial officer handle basically all day-to-day operations following the guidelines of the CEO. That's it.
Yeah, no, that's great. So before 2020, like pre-pandemic, how much did Catalyst at the time use like social platforms and online? I would say, well, I guess both Catalyst and for you personally.
Yeah, so pre-pandemic, we as a business, we had all the traditional technologies and softwares and so on and so forth. We were online social media-wise, Facebook, Instagram, yada, yada. So I would say we were the same as most businesses with that. And then internally for operational structures, we are pretty technologically inclined. So we had already started to embrace like the cloud accounting softwares. We already had just before the pandemic, we had signed up for VoIP phone systems and technology, which is like the equivalent of what now everybody knows as Teams. We didn't use Teams to start with, but something similar, where all of our faxing, all of our emailing, all of our phones, all of our video conferencing, all was housed in one spot with IM. And then there was breakout rooms and so similar to Zoom. And so we had that pre-pandemic. I wouldn't say we readily used it, but we had the technology in place for people that needed to or wanted to. We had the luxury of being a fairly forward-thinking firm. And so with that, hybrid work is not something that I would say we used as a slogan term, but we always offered the opportunity to have some version of remote or to make your life work for you. And so I would say that part of COVID was probably the simplest as far as the actual hows to do that, because we had already started to operate a lot of that. That being said, obviously the volume of people wanting to do it drastically increased. And probably, I would say there was two major challenges that came with that. One was technology and the accessibility of technology. Second to that is obviously just the culture part. And part of COVID, and especially the earlier, and then as we've hit the waves of COVID, has been that it has to be work-life integration, right? We have so many people with children, so many people with like people that have to live with them now so that they can take care of their parents or their children or each other, whatever that might be. And so keeping our culture alive when now people are working at different times, because we're trying to be as forgiving and supportive as possible around that. That has been a challenge. We've always, pre-COVID also, have always been a company that prides ourselves on valuing people for people and understanding that people have a life outside of here. So work-life integration, I would say, is the slogan we try and use, not in the overworking our employees mentality way, but more in the fact that we do fully understand people have other obligations and priorities. And so. But that is a challenge when now we're all virtual, well, currently still kind of mostly virtual, because some people need work done at this time and you have a quick turnaround and you may not want to reach out because the kids are sleeping or things like that.
And if I could just ask a really quick follow-up, you mentioned about culture. Can you speak to, I hadn't thought of this before, but to, because you said like work-life balance, and obviously that's super important, but also I know like when everyone is in the office, there is like a culture where, you know, everyone's together and working and like you have your little chit chats and stuff. I would imagine that that would be drastically different when everyone is dispersed and online. Like, was there, and like, did you feel a real disconnect with your coworkers, or was there any kind of, you know, like what was that like?
So I would say that 98% of our staff would say that the culture has changed and probably not improved, and not in a bad way, but everything now has to be significantly more intentional. So the early month or two, even of COVID, everybody was in their own bubble. And so I think the initial shock of culture shock came probably about 3 months later, when it was like, wow, I don't even think I've seen these people. And because of the nature of the way we operate, there's very few areas or lines that have really close-knit teams. Otherwise, our primary, I'll call it our mothership, our biggest department, is you work with different partners at different times. And so there's not necessarily a direct line. And so we definitely struggled with that because as much as you can just reach out and call someone, there is that, oh, but what if they're dealing with their family? Or if, you know, I mean, a lot of people are afraid to reach out to the ownership or partners just because, oh, they're a partner, but they want you to reach out, right? And so you have to rebuild that culture, that trust around that. And so we did a few things to circumvent and at least help with that. One was we started doing wellness calls where we would call each individual employee, check in with them. Thankfully, we're small enough we could do that, but mm-hmm. we would check in with them. You know, I was doing the calls. And so part of my operating system as a at a personal level is very authentic. And, you know, how are you really? I don't want to talk about work. I want to talk about you or talk about the kids or talk about your husband or, you know, how are you doing? Where do you see this going? What do you hope will happen? Do you have what you need? So we did a lot of those calls in the first 6-8 months, like fairly frequently. So, and that seemed to really help. I think that ultimately culture, because it's very hard, you know, you're dealing with security and safety of your staff, you're dealing with the fact that people now are operating kind of from home or on their own, and so schedules are a little bit different, and we've changed our focus to end result, which is amazing and what every business should do, but sometimes process is how people grow and develop. So we have not beaten the culture issue. I think we still have a good culture, but we have a few more people in the office now. And those of us, myself included, that are here, I think we all genuinely like being here and try, you know, we're looking forward to the day when we can start seeing a few more people at a time, but we're getting there. I don't know. I'm fingers crossed.
So are there things like obviously the culture, but are there, were there business end things that you found that didn't work as well online as opposed to in person? Like you mentioned it a little bit, but is there anything specific that you could think of?
Yeah, I mean, speaking directly to the learning aspect, that becomes significantly harder because body language and eye-to-eye contact can help really read between the lines when somebody's not catching on to something. Things like tone obviously kind of gets lost in the Zoom world. So I would say learning and development was a huge spot that we haven't beaten that challenge. But it's there, and I think we're more prevalent to paying attention to it. So that has been a challenge and definitely somewhere that I don't know that there's a solution. We've started doing hybrid and in person, so people have the option to choose. We now record, which is actually a huge positive, to be honest. We record sessions and training so that people can go back and look at the micro trainings or regroup on what they thought they seen. So we found ways around it or some positives, but it's still not perfect. The other thing that I think technology we haven't found a solution for is mentorship and just the casual, you know, the casual walk by and, oh, hey, Foster, you didn't do this. This is how I would have done it, because everything has to be so intentional, which can be great for productivity and efficiency, but productivity and efficiency do not make up for the non-casual, right? Like for the, let's just chat about this casual, I don't know, client that did something, and then people learn from that and gain mentorship from that or so forth. And so that has not been solved yet. And we definitely see that gap.
Yeah. And then maybe the last thing is kind of just, if you have anything that you want to say on maybe your personal, like we were talking about personal learning networks and kind of if you have a network of professionals online that's different from in person, or if it's all kind of like interwoven, or if you want to speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, so I would say for the most part, everything is interwoven, especially when you get into a professional group of people. When you speak personally, it looks a little different, but I think the positive or negative of COVID is that everything now is so readily accessible and everybody kicked off Teams groups or sidebar or Facebook groups or, you know, so on and so forth. And so there's so much learning that can happen. I know I said to one staff, I'm like, this is the time to learn, and for free. Like everyone was doing it for free or super cheap. You could do, I mean, I think you could do almost a master's degree for free taking all this stuff. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, I think it made people more comfortable to cold call, reach out. Like I know a lot of the networks that I've always been pretty robust with, if I wanted to connect with somebody, just cold call, reaching out, using whatever platform. I mean, LinkedIn is kind of an HR space, so we use LinkedIn for a lot, but setting up now Google Teams or setting up your own little private ones, I would say a lot of people are doing it, but I also think that everybody is kind of tired of that. So I think there's good and bad. I'm very much a catalyst person. I prefer the relationship, which is for me more developed in a face-to-face, or, you know, this is fine for a primary introduction, but anything further than that, I want to get to know you and read your body language, and I want you to get to know my humor and, you know, those sorts of things. So I think it's great for certain things, but you know, when you go to online platforms, you are getting what people want you to see versus what you either need to see or want to see about those people. And so
curated a little bit.
Yeah. And because you're online all day, I personally have stepped back from social platforms a lot because I don't want to look at a screen anymore.
Yep.
So yeah, that was my interview with Tracy. I want to make sure that I thank her because she was so gracious with her time and for talking with us and kind of sharing her opinion and her experience, which I think has been really beneficial for us to just take a look at it from a slightly different angle. But essentially, yeah, this is our podcast, and we all, I think, really benefited from this class and learned a lot and are excited to kind of take what we've learned and just carry it into the rest of our lives as humans that use social media.